Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. And the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. So I've been using Armoire and I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now as I'm recording this, and it's a great idea. You don't have to commit to buying the clothes, but you can really start to explore your own personal style. Like if there's a trend or something that you've been wanting to maybe try but not commit to, this is absolutely perfect. Because if you don't like it, you just put it back in the bag and get something else. Because we've all been there. You open your closet, and even though it's packed, you feel like you have nothing to wear. And with Armoire, that's a thing of the past. They make it effortless for all women to turn heads with stylish everyday looks. You can rent high-quality designer clothing for any occasion, and it's all tailored to your personal style. Plus, you don't have to do laundry, and you don't have to go shopping. It truly could not be any easier. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month, which is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/ATTWG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends that they'll deliver discreetly right to your doorstep. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code ATTWG. It is wild how different each one of their gummies feels. Their sleepy time gummies knock me out in about 15 minutes flat with no hangovers, no grogginess, and I just wake up feeling amazing. Oh, and the Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for those days when nothing's going right and you just need to hit the reset button on your crap mood. What makes these different is how they pair THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're not gonna just find gummies like this in a dispensary, or anywhere for that matter. And they have gummies for literally everything. Immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, and sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably. Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, Avocado Green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. On March 6, 2009, a single mom was settling in for a quiet evening at home. Her two daughters, Amanda and Samantha, were with their father for the weekend, so she had the house to herself. It had been a busy week at work, so Nancy Moyer was looking forward to relaxing with a glass of wine. But that Sunday, when Bill Moyer came to her home to drop off their daughters, He found the front door open, the television on, but no Nancy. Since that day, there have been several suspects, including a convicted murderer, a suspicious coworker, and even a man who confessed to her murder, but no arrests. 13 years later, Nancy's daughters are still actively searching for both their mother and for justice. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Nancy Moyer. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us again. If you listened to our episode last week, or if you're on our Patreon, you know that the podcaster's worst nightmare happened to us, and I lost the entire episode. So this is a two-parter, and part two's fine. It is doing great. Part one, gone. Gone forever. So we do have to re-record part one. If you are on our Patreon, you will get both parts, you know, pretty much at the same time. And if you are not, you will get part two next week. But, you know, if you've listened to our show before, you know that the whole kind of deal with it is that I do all the work. Ethan is just a pretty face, and he doesn't know about these stories before we record. So this is different in that he does, because we have recorded this.
Yes. However, I have a terrible memory.
Yeah, literally. It's 51st dates, like, every single day.
So it's almost like I'm hearing it again.
Yeah, honestly, I think you probably remember nothing.
But if some of what I say in part two doesn't really match up with what I was saying or thinking in part one, now you know the reason why. Because this is us redoing this.
Yeah, a little out of order. So, you know, listen, we're doing our best here. But this case, you know, even though it was 2009, it has had movement recently. And I think that it got a lot of attention a few years ago. There were some big bombshells, but it's gone a little bit quiet again. So I think it's really important to get Nancy's story out there continuously to kind of keep the momentum going and hopefully finally get some answers for, you know, her daughters and her other loved ones. So right now, let's get into the story of Nancy Moyer. Nancy Kareem Hedlund was born on November 22, 1972 in Olympia, Washington. She has at least one sister named Sharon Wilbur. Nancy was bright and friendly, like the type of person who fit in with all of the high school cliques and got along with everyone. After high school, she attended Central Washington University, where she studied accounting. And I mean, you can kind of guess this because she studied accounting, but like, she was a go-getter. She knew what she wanted, and she was determined to build this career for herself, though she probably didn't expect to fall in love in the process. While she was still in college, Nancy had an internship at an agricultural company. It was there that she met her future husband, Bill Moyer. Bill was 24 at the time and working full-time at the company. The two also went to the same gym, and it kind of sounds like Bill started chatting her up there, and soon the pair began dating. Their relationship continued as Nancy finished college, and shortly after graduation, they were married. Nancy wasn't putting her career on hold, though. Within the year, she landed her dream job as a fiscal analyst at the Washington State Department of Ecology. She hadn't been there long, though, when she discovered that she was pregnant. And rather than seeing this as a career setback or anything like that, like, Nancy was thrilled, because being a mother was another dream that she had had her entire life. Since Nancy was the type of person who brought people together and was friends with everyone, her work colleagues basically became a second family to her. And like family, they were thrilled for her pregnancy. In July of 1997, Nancy gave birth to her daughter, Amanda. Just over 2 years later, in November of 99, her daughter, Samantha, was born. By all accounts, including from her daughters, Nancy was a devoted mother. She loved her kids. She always worked hard to make birthdays and holidays extra special for them. She and Bill were really living like the perfect suburban life. They had their home, children, and great jobs. They were the family that would have barbecues and entertain. And Nancy basically achieved all of her goals at a pretty young age. But that also turned out to be the problem. She did everything young. As the years went on, Nancy became more successful in her job. She raised her children, but she felt as though something was missing. She started reflecting on what she had missed by being in a serious relationship during college and marrying right after and, you know, getting the job and having the babies and like doing all these things that she thought she was supposed to do. Because she had been on a track, but as she entered her 30s, she started to wonder if maybe there was more out there for her. In 2007, she and Bill separated after 11 years of marriage. As devoted as Nancy was as a mother, Bill was as devoted as a father. And the split was not acrimonious. He seemed to accept that they had grown apart and they both wanted to make sure their daughters were always put first. Bill was interviewed on an episode of Disappeared where he said that they really didn't have many arguments about like how to raise the kids or visitation or where everyone would live, anything like that. In fact, though they weren't planning on getting back together, they had also never bothered to get divorced. So there wasn't a formal custody or child support arrangement in place. Like, you know, there wasn't a court battle or anything that you hear a lot in these stories. Like, they just kind of worked it out on their own. And I can identify with that because that's exactly what happened when my parents split as well. Like they were married for years after they separated, like legally, you know, obviously they were not together, but it just wasn't important to them to get divorced. Like it just seemed like a pain, I guess, more than anything else. So like they never bothered to do it. I mean, for years. So I get it.
Well, as somebody who has been divorced several times, as you love to point out, it is a major pain.
Yeah.
Like, it's a tremendous pain in the ass to actually go through all the legal hoops to get divorced. So,
yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound fun.
No, and I totally understand like the thought of not being in a rush because, you know, hey, if you have everything figured out, child custody,
yeah, houses, money, whatever,
yeah, who the hell cares?
Yeah, exactly. And like neither one of them was, you know, looking to get remarried or anything like that. Like that wasn't why they separated, you know, they just kind of like Nancy, especially I can't speak for Bill, but you know, it seems like Nancy just really kind of wanted to discover herself. It wasn't about like moving on with another person or anything like that.
Right.
So yeah, you know, it's fine. Like, and listen, I just get not wanting to bother. Like it's the main reason I didn't change my name when we got married. Cause it just seemed difficult and annoying. Bill stayed in the family home on Sheldon Lane in Rochester, Washington, and Nancy moved into a little two-bedroom house in Tenino. Even though Nancy was in a different town, her new home was only about a 10-minute drive away. The girls stayed with her during the week and went with their father on the weekends. Nancy continued to hang out with her friends from work, but also started going out more and meeting new people. I'm going to talk about her colleague and friend Bev Poston a lot because, like, talk about a friend. This woman searched tireless for Nancy and still is to this day. On that episode of Disappeared, she said something that makes complete sense to me. As Nancy started to go out and meet more people, she started realizing that men were attracted to her. And even though Nancy had always been beautiful and smart and friendly, like, she had been with the same man since college. So to her, the idea that other people out there would find her attractive and interesting was kind of novel to her. And I think that feeling is something that a lot of people who date after a divorce or a separation or a long-term relationship of some sort can relate to. You know, you're just in this one place for so long, and then you realize, like, oh, there are people who see me outside of this. That's weird.
For sure. But there's also the understanding that those people have probably been hit on and they were just not aware. Much like you.
All right. In addition to dating, Nancy also did fun things that she kind of missed out on, like getting tattoos. And you could definitely tell she was making up for her lost college days when she got these, which is why I absolutely love them. They are all brightly colored. She got like six of them. And they're very much college girl tattoos. So there's an armband with hearts and flowers and stars, a Playboy bunny, a butterfly, a few more tattoos of flowers, and like on her foot, she had a pair of cherries. And inside of the cherries, one was an A and one had an S for Amanda and Sam. But even though she was out there reliving her lost youth, Nancy wasn't being reckless or anything like that. She was still a mother with a prestigious government job. So, you know, we're not talking drugs or like excessive drinking or anything like that. We're not talking huge risk factors here.
No, just going out and enjoying her weekends.
Yeah, just like normal stuff that you can do when you're single. Like her biggest vice was cigarettes.
Gross.
Yeah, I mean, completely. But again, not something that's going to make you more likely to be a victim of a crime.
Yeah.
On that Friday, March 6th, Nancy was driving home with her colleague, a guy named Matthew Vandrush. Their office was in Lacey, Washington, right outside of Olympia. It was about 30 minutes away, so they carpooled. And that day, it was Matthew's turn to drive. On the drive back to Tenino, the two chatted about weekend plans. Matthew says that Nancy told him that despite not having the girls that weekend, she was planning on staying home and relaxing. Matthew dropped Nancy off at her home as usual, like between 5:30 and 6 p.m. Later that evening, around 6:45, Nancy went to the nearby Thriftway market to pick up two bottles of wine, cigarettes, and a microwave dinner.
Party.
Like, honestly, I related to this so hard. I mean, not the cigarettes, but everything else. I'm just like, yes, like that is a Friday night. Now, we do know these specifics because the receipt was found in her home. So we do know those are the items she bought. We know that is the time she bought them, and she paid with a check in addition.
Right. So Matthew was not the last person to see her alive.
Exactly. He was the last person she knows, but not the last person in general. And of course, we'll get more into all of that as well.
Yeah, because right now,
I mean, obviously, right?
Matthew's not looking good right now. Last person to see her that knew her and knew her schedule, knew that she'd be in for the night.
Nancy lived off of a major highway, and apparently police officers frequently set up speed traps like right in front of her house. And the officer who was working that evening says that he saw a woman he believed to be Nancy return home with grocery bags. And so this is all consistent with what she told Matthew, that she was having a quiet night at home. It's consistent with her purchases at the grocery store. Like, everything's adding up. She also didn't mention any plans on Saturday to Matthew when they were driving home. And Nancy's sister, Sharon, also spoke with her at some point that Friday. I don't know what time, if it was like during the day while she was at work, if it was after she got home or what. But she says that when she spoke with her, that Nancy didn't mention having any plans that weekend. So when no one saw Nancy on Saturday, it wasn't alarming because nobody was expecting to see her on Saturday.
Right.
So then on Sunday afternoon, Bill went to Nancy's house like he always did to drop off their kids. But when he got there, Nancy's front door was just sitting open. And that was strange, obviously. But, you know, like Nancy's car was there. So he just assumed, you know, she was going in and out or whatever. Like she didn't close the door. I mean, it wasn't something that made him nervous necessarily. It was just a little bit odd. So he and the girls went into the house, but Nancy wasn't there. So at this point, he's still thinking that she just ran out for a few minutes. It's weird she didn't close the door, but not the weirdest, I guess. But then, you know, while they were kind of waiting around for her, he noticed that her purse, her cell phone, her keys, and her cigarettes had all been left behind.
Did he touch any of these things that we know of?
Not that we know of. That's never been mentioned in anything.
Okay.
And so he started to get concerned. And it's interesting. So the purse and the keys and the phone were kind of all out, like, just in her house. I don't know exactly where they were, but, you know, wherever she would usually leave them, like, not an abnormal place. But the cigarettes and her lighter were actually out on her porch on this little table that she had out front, because she would usually just sit in this chair and smoke outside.
So they were in a place, I mean, so we're assuming that she was outside smoking.
At some point, yeah. Like, they were in a normal place, but, like, so not everything wasn't together, but they were all in places where they should have been.
Mm-hmm.
When he sees all of this stuff here and she's not immediately back, Bill starts to get concerned. But, you know, nothing looked amiss in the house. Like, there was no chairs toppled over or anything like that. I mean, it truly looked like she had just stepped out for a minute. There was even a glass of wine on the table with an empty glass next to it, and the TV was on.
The second glass.
Yeah, so the second glass was empty in that it didn't appear that anything had ever been poured in it. It wasn't empty in that somebody had finished it.
Right, but, I mean, you don't just pull out two wine glasses if you're planning on a night alone.
Yeah, no, exactly. But again, like, you know, Bill didn't know that, like, what her plans had been that
oh,
weekend,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Yeah. So he's like, okay, this is weird. So they waited around for a little while, because they assumed she had to have been coming back, but she didn't. And so eventually Bill took the girls back to his house. And this is not like Nancy. I mean, Nancy is very responsible. Like, she was rarely ever late when it came to, you know, pick up and drop off of their kids. And she certainly never just blew it off. So he was not panicked at first, but just very confused, like, did not know what was happening. So when he got back to his house, he started calling around to Nancy's friends and family, but no one had heard from her or seen her or anything. So Bill is, like, you know, obviously getting more concerned, but trying not to panic. And so he just kept the girls with him. And it wasn't until the next morning, when Nancy didn't show up for work, that Bill knew, yeah, like, we can't deny this anymore. Something is horribly wrong. The next morning, which was Monday morning, Bill called police and reported her missing. Tenino police started an investigation and then immediately called in the Thurston County Sheriff's Department, because Tenino is a tiny town. The population that I read was like 7,000. And I don't know if that was then or now or whatever, but it's a tiny town.
Well, I mean, good for them for realizing their limitations. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Not limitations on training or capability, but
numbers, just, on bodies, on,
yeah, like,
resources,
yeah,
whatever.
Assuming if it's a town with 7,000 people, the police department's going to be pretty small. So
yeah, so it sounds like they brought in Thurston County, like, almost immediately. So they went in and searched Nancy's home, and of course they're looking for signs of a break-in, a struggle, you know, anything that would make sense as to, like, why Nancy had not returned, but they didn't find anything. They collected the two wine glasses and the bottle that were on the coffee table, but the only fingerprints on them belonged to Nancy. However, they did find a few interesting messages on her answering machine. And, you know, this is 2009, and so people still had landlines in 2009, and yes, she had a cell phone or whatever, but she also had a physical answering machine that you could just press play. You didn't need her password. You didn't need anything like that. So they were able to listen to her messages very quickly. And what they found is that a man named Jim had left two messages for Nancy. One referenced a date on Saturday. Of course, police were interested because, you know, they didn't have very many clues. So they were wondering, could this man have seen Nancy on Saturday? Now, they went and asked friends and family of Nancy's if they knew Jim, but no one knew who that could have been. Like, the man didn't give his full name because that would be a weird thing to say on a message when you're talking about a date. He just said it's Jim. But yeah, nobody who knew Nancy knew who Jim was. So while they were running down this lead, detectives focused on one of the oddest elements of this disappearance, which was the open door. And this was very interesting to me, like what they did with this. They actually checked with the utility company and found that electric usage spiked between 9 p.m. and midnight on Friday. And this led investigators to believe that Nancy disappeared sometime Friday night or early Saturday morning. And, you know, the reason they came to this conclusion is because this is early March in Washington State, so it got cold at night.
Yeah, that's actually really smart.
Yeah, and so her heat would have been on. If the door's open, your heat's going to go up, your power usage is going to spike. And yeah, and it started around 9 p.m. apparently.
I mean, that's brilliant. That narrows the timeline down.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Now, of course, the first thing they considered when they went in and didn't find signs of struggle or anything like that was that Nancy could have
hoagied it.
Yes, picked up and started a new life. She was apparently in a good amount of debt. Like, just credit card debt, not like to loan sharks or anything like that. But, you know, regardless, they speculated that she could have run away to avoid that. But that was dumb, and fortunately, they dismissed it pretty quickly. The next obvious place to go was the estranged husband. Right. Like,
yeah.
It's got to be your number one suspect.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they interviewed Bill. You know, they gave him a polygraph. They checked his alibi, but everything checked out. He passed the polygraph. He just seemed very concerned about where Nancy was.
Yeah, and his daughters were with him.
Yeah, exactly. And they were with him like the entire weekend. I mean, I don't know specifically what his alibi was, but like basically he was just with his kids all weekend.
Yeah.
And investigators, and they did something that, you know, he later went on and, you know, did interviews and said he appreciated, which I'm sure he did, because a lot of family members don't get this. Investigators publicly like went on national news and said that he was not a suspect.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah. Like specifically they went on Nancy Grace and said that, and you know, like she's like all about like hanging people and whatever.
Murderous ex-husbands.
Exactly. And yeah. So they said like, no, it's not this guy.
Wow.
Yeah. Very early on, like within the first month of the investigation, you know, all right, if it's not Bill, then you got to kind of just work the timeline, right?
Matthew.
Exactly.
That's got to be Matthew.
That's who they went to next. Well, not exactly next. First, they spoke to like they went in the actual timeline. So they spoke to the police officer who was like the last any person to report seeing Nancy.
Yeah, but they're not going to. That's to, you know, confirm the timeline, not.
Yeah.
Not to narrow down suspects.
Right. So they spoke to him. They went to the grocery store. They, you know, spoke to the manager. They spoke to the people who were working, said like, hey, do you remember Nancy? Do you know, was she with anybody? Was she alone? Was there anybody who was like following her, looking at her weird, anything like that? And it didn't seem like people really remembered her being in there, or if they did, nothing like stuck out about it.
Right.
So, like, no creepy guy in a trench coat or, you know, anything like that.
Why has it got to be a trench coat?
I mean, because that's the universal symbol of creepy guys. Everybody knows that. Like, come on. So, we confirmed the timeline. That's about it. So, yes. Then, they went to Matthew. Police, you know, were, of course, wondering if, like, he was perhaps more than a friend, more than a coworker, more than just some guy she carpooled with. Despite the fact that he was married.
As if that stopped anybody before.
Exactly. And, you know, it was kind of interesting. When I was researching this, I found the Web Sleuth's posts, like the original ones from March of 2009. So these posts are being made in real time as information was being released on this case. And there were several that said that this dude was suspicious as hell. Web Sleuth's people in 2009 did not like this guy. Shortly after Nancy's disappearance, he started a website, nancymoyer.com. All of this was great because it had all of her information. It had pictures of her. It had the circumstances of her disappearance. It was just an easy place to point people to disseminate information. But he would also write these blog posts that really struck people as weird. The website no longer exists, but because these web sleuths posts were happening contemporaneously, there was somebody who copy and pasted one.
Yeah, because everything exists all the time on the internet. You can never get rid of things on the internet. Once it's out there, it's out there.
Yeah. All right. So this is one of the blog posts. Quote, "You should see the love around here. Someone brought in donuts on Friday when we got the stack of flyers. Sorry, I know you hate missing treat days. If it's any consolation, Debbie has been ready to make raised dips since Monday, but she said we'll wait because it's your favorite. Talk about loyalty. Seriously, though, everyone's real worried and we're working real hard to find you. I need you to be strong for us and hang it in there a little longer. I can't tell you how many people are pulling for you. Please be strong. We all miss you. Talk to you again soon. Matthew." End quote.
Thumbs down button, man. It's fucking creepy.
Yeah.
You know, on so many levels. It's okay, if that's your coping mechanism, don't put that online. You know?
Yeah, but it's 2009. We are people just put everything online. We didn't know.
I didn't.
No, honey, you didn't know how to use a computer.
It just seems so fucking weird.
I know, but you've never, that's just never been your realm.
I had MySpace.
Okay.
I wrote things on MySpace.
So I don't know if police talked to Matthew before or after this, so I don't know if these blog posts made them suspicious at all.
It should have.
Or what it was.
Hang it in there a little longer.
Yeah. But people on the internet were definitely not into it.
I'm on their side.
But Matthew was with his wife and son all weekend. In fact, his wife was also friends with Nancy and ran that website with him. And their coworkers vouched for Matthew as well. They said that the relationship between Matthew and Nancy was definitely more of a brother-sister vibe than anything else.
I'm not buying it yet. I just don't.
He had a very strong alibi. He was at baseball, his kids' baseball games. He was just out and about all weekend. It was just easily verifiable. Everybody vouched for him. He just actually just seems a normal guy. Nancy lived in a rural area, so police started conducting searches in the woods and other areas around her home. But Bev, her friend from work, didn't think that they were doing enough, so she and some of Nancy's coworkers organized their own searches. They put up flyers, they gathered volunteers, and they got out there to try to find Nancy. I mentioned before that Nancy had been going out and meeting new people, but the problem was when it came to investigating her disappearance is that she was very discreet about anyone she may have been seeing. She never brought them back to her house, and she seemingly only dated casually. And while that's perfectly acceptable and probably smart for, a newly single mother of two, it presented police with problems.
For sure.
At this point, because they don't know who they're supposed to be interviewing.
Right. So then they have to look at places that she frequented.
Yeah. And so that's...
And then try to... narrow it
figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah. Which right? is next to impossible.
Yeah. Well, luckily, I said, Tenino's a small town. So I think there are only so many places she could have gone.
Yeah.
So at least that was a little bit easier. She wasn't in New York City or anything like that. So I think they were able to figure out pretty quickly, at least where she would hang out and that kind of information. And yeah, they did exactly what you said. They went there, they talked to bartenders, they talked to, staff and whatever, and was hey, have you seen this woman? Did she come in here? Who was she with? And from there, they did find some men that she had like dated or hung out with or whatever. And they were able to start interviewing some people. But even once they figured all this stuff out and started talking to people, nobody knew who Jim was. And I will say, I mean, and I didn't write this in, this is just kind of an aside. There was one guy that she had gone out with for a while, and they found him through these conversations at different bars or whatever. And they interviewed him, and he was like, yeah, like we dated for a little while. We broke up. I actually broke it off. It happens, you know, whenever. He had an alibi. He's like, it wasn't a big deal. And they cleared him. So
not by the name of James.
No. He was just some other guy. They hadn't seen each other in months by that point. But the point is that like police found him, you know?
Yeah. And it shows that they were actually doing their job.
Right.
And doing it well.
Yeah. And that wasn't somebody who like Nancy's friends and family said, oh, you should talk to X or whatever.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to kind of throw that out there. Investigators, of course, went to Nancy's office to interview her friends and coworkers, since she was so close to many of them. And they did clear basically everyone. And Bev said she actually came on that Web Sleuths forum and did some posts. And on one of them, she said, she's like, yeah, I don't know. They interviewed like a lot of us. They gave several people polygraphs. She said it was fine. It seems like everybody was cleared, except there was one guy who just made detectives feel weird. Like they just saw this one dude and they're like,
And it wasn't Matthew?
It was not. It was somebody else we've talked about.
James.
Yeah, it was Jim. Police soon realized that this coworker, Jim Roth, was the Jim who had left those messages on Nancy's machine the weekend she disappeared. And remember, he was like trying to get together for a date. And I really wish that at some point they would have released either the recording of these voicemails or like the transcript or just, I don't know, something, because police have openly given interviews and talked about these voicemails over the years. So it's not like they're trying to like hold them back or whatever, but it's unclear the context. I'm not 100% sure if he was confirming a date that they had already made, or if he was trying to set one up
on a future Saturday.
No, that Saturday.
Or maybe even that Saturday.
Yeah, I think it was clear that it was that Saturday he was referring to. But what I don't know was, because if they're, you know, they're coworkers, so if like they had already made these plans to meet on Saturday and he's calling her about that date they had already planned, or if he's calling her to try to ask her out for that Saturday.
Yeah. Which either, I mean, if she is as discreet about her dating life as you say she is, mm-hmm. if she's dating somebody from work, she wouldn't have told Matthew that she was going out with Jim.
Right. And or Bev, you know, apparently, because she didn't know about it either.
Right.
You know? And so, but I think knowing that detail would shed more light on the nature of their relationship.
Right.
Like, was this something that was actually a thing
that was going on,
right?
Or whether,
or is this just some guy she works with trying to make something happen? That to me is important in this context.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is.
Yeah, and unfortunately, like, we don't know. So anyway, if I'm a detective, my first red flag, other than the guy's just general nervous and creepy demeanor that the police notice at the office, is that he hadn't come forward with this information.
Right.
By this point, when they're interviewing all of these people, Nancy had been missing for a week or so, but he never called police or like volunteered the information and said, hey, I was actually trying to get in touch with Nancy last weekend. Like, or hey, we actually had plans to meet and she didn't show. Whatever the case may have been.
Right. Yeah. Hey, I called and left a voicemail. I was trying to set something up.
Yeah.
Set up a date, whatever. Like, yeah.
Whatever it was. Like, if you're just, you know, the worried coworker slash dude she's seeing, that seems to me something you would tell the police about before they had to, like, dig around and figure out who you are.
Right.
So investigators brought Jim Roth, you know, into the station for an interview, and he tells them that he and Nancy had been out a few times, most recently a few weeks before her disappearance. He also says that Nancy spent the night at his apartment one night, and this is like where I don't understand why. But he tells police that, like, yes, we hooked up, but I had trouble performing.
Oh, Jim.
Right. Why? Like, tell them that you hooked up. Like, that's helpful information in an investigation like this. But, like, you don't need to go. Like, why? I can't, for the life of me, Monday morning quarterbacking this 13 years later, figure out, like, what he was trying to accomplish with that.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, it just doesn't make any sense because it's not like it would. I mean, maybe he was concerned about them finding like epithelial skin DNA or whatever.
Weeks before her disappearance, and it was at his place, not hers. So like there's no and also like just leave it at you hooked up. Like
I mean, I agree. I don't understand that.
Like, no, it's so weird.
Sympathy, maybe?
I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know.
I need the psychologist to weigh in because I don't get it. So anyway, he like goes on. He's like, yeah, so that happened, but she stayed the night anyway. I made her breakfast the next morning and she left.
Oh.
No, it still doesn't matter because this is weeks before her disappearance.
No, but maybe this is him trying to build this relationship up or trying to show that this relationship was more than what it actually was.
Okay, why? I mean, I couldn't perform.
I still don't understand that. But like, maybe he's like trying to. Okay, leave that part out. Like. But she stayed anyway.
Yeah, like whatever, fine.
Romantic breakfast.
Good for her. You could just say she stayed over.
I don't know. I'm speculating here. It's just
like it still doesn't make sense. So of course, police were like, okay, cool story, but I'm more interested in where you were the weekend of March 6th.
Right.
Particularly on Friday night during that window they believe she went missing. Jim tells them that he and his wife are separated, and it seems like that was pretty recent. And so he and his two sons were at his apartment that night. That Friday night, he was at his apartment with them. He never left because, you know, he wouldn't leave his son's home alone.
But how old are his kids?
Well, exactly. So I did snooping, obviously. And if I'm correct, what it seems like is that his kids were like 8 and 14.
So old enough that he could have actually left them.
Yeah, like if they were
It's not like they were toddlers.
Well, exactly. Like if they were asleep, I mean, if they were awake and he left, like obviously they would notice. If they were both asleep and he left, he could do whatever he needed to do, nefarious or not, and then come back and everything would be fine. They're old enough that he wouldn't worry about them like dying if he was gone for a few hours or whatever. Regardless, that's his alibi. He was home with his kids on Friday night. Her friends kind of made the point that I did. We're like, okay, well, but he could have put them to bed and he could have left after that. So that in their eyes, and I mean her family and friends, not necessarily the police, you know, it didn't clear Jim. Not that police cleared him either, but you know. So Jim says that he never went to Nancy's home on Friday because he was with his kids. But then he tells them, oh, but I did go over on Saturday and I went into her house.
What?
Yeah. By the way, information he did not volunteer. That's my biggest problem. I mean, also, I'll tell you about the circumstances and they're weird. So like, that's another thing. But he did not volunteer this before they brought him into the police station. So this dude, he was not her boyfriend or anything, like just some guy who had gone out with her a few times weeks ago and they worked together. He got so worried when she didn't return his calls on Friday that on Saturday he drove over to her house. And, you know, again, I mentioned that I was nosy and I believe that I found his apartment at the time, which was in Olympia. which was near their office, but a half an hour away from her house.
So not in any feasible route that he would have, like, no. stumbled across her apartment.
No, it's one thing if, like, he was in Tenino and she was in Olympia, and then he could have been like, well, you know, I had to go to Olympia for whatever, and so I thought I'd stop by and see how she's doing.
Who goes to Tenino?
Yeah, nobody goes to Tenino on a Saturday randomly. Like, that's not a thing.
You don't know, maybe they have a good diner.
I mean, maybe they do. Anyway, so regardless of his, like, pretense, other than being so worried that she would dare not return his call, he went to her house, saw that her car was there, parked, went up to her front door, saw that it was open, and went, oh, all right, I guess I'll just go in. Goes into her house, and it's a small house. So, like, you know, it's not super weird that he was basically in her entire house, because this thing's, like, under 1,000 square feet. But he, like, goes back to the bedroom and is like, Nancy, it's not there. He goes, huh, that's weird. And then leaves the house and leaves the door open, gets into his car, goes home, doesn't tell anybody for over a week after she's reported missing.
That's just him coming up with an excuse as to why they may find something DNA related to him in the apartment.
Yeah, exactly. Because all of her friends and her family are like, yeah, she didn't bring dudes over. So, and nobody knew about Jim in general.
Right.
So there is no, like, reasonable explanation for him to have his prints or his DNA or anything in her house.
So this gives him that excuse to be in the house, but not during the time frame when she was potentially abducted.
Correct. Yeah. And, you know, so again, it's, like, different from Bill, who I'm sure they found his prints in the house, right? Because he was there, like, every single week, yeah. dropping their kids off.
Yeah.
You know?
That's going to happen.
Yeah. So, but Jim did not have that excuse. So he comes up with this story, which is bizarre. And, you know, all of it's bizarre, but, you know, the
fact— Wait, didn't you— Wasn't this— You said this was his weekend with his kids.
It was Bill. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, no, I didn't say weekend.
So oh, he, just Friday night.
He only said of. Friday night.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say, if it was like the right. whole weekend, like, okay, he alibied himself Friday night and then he unalibied himself for Saturday? Like,
yeah. No, he never said that he had the kids the entire weekend.
Okay. Gotcha. Still very dumb to place yourself there.
Yeah. The whole thing was bizarre.
Unless you're trying to come up with an excuse as to why the police might find some residual DNA of some sort.
Well,
that,
yeah.
That you were there.
Exactly. So everyone thinks the story is weird. The only reason Jim knew where she lived in the first place, apparently, is because he had picked her up there for their date. He had never, like, really been to the house because, like we said, Nancy didn't do that. Police immediately start thinking exactly what you're thinking. Like, is he making this whole story up to explain why they might find fingerprints or whatever in her house? And then, of course, they think it's also weird that he would have left the door open when he left and didn't find her there. And it, like, okay, I get it where, you know, maybe you're like, okay, well, I don't want to close the door because maybe she left it open for a reason, or maybe I'll be locking her out or whatever. But it's like, it's a door. A normal door, not like a dungeon door or anything.
Or a door to an apartment that locks automatically.
Yeah, this is a house. It's just a door. So, like, just make sure it's not locked and then right. close it. Yeah. Like, whatever. It's March in Washington.
Yeah.
You're letting all the air out.
I will say this. There's this repeated theme that she didn't bring guys over to the house. Mm-hmm. So why was there a second wine glass out?
That was a question that a lot of people were asking. That in and of itself was out of character.
Right.
So Jim agrees to take a polygraph, but his vitals are completely all over the place. So every answer to every question, even like, what is your name, comes back as a lie. He was just a disaster. So the entire polygraph is useless. So at this moment, Jim is their prime suspect, but other than him just being weird, like, they don't have any actual evidence that he had anything to do with Nancy's disappearance. They never did recover any fingerprints or DNA of his from her home, you know? So, like, if he did make up that story, he didn't need to because they didn't find anything. With all of that, they don't even have enough evidence to search his car, which, if they had their way, that would have been their next step. Because Nancy's car was there, so they know she didn't leave in her car.
Right. Yeah, that's the next logical step of the investigation if you are trying to rule somebody out.
Right.
But you are correct. There is not enough evidence to lead to probable cause for a search warrant.
No. And, you know, Jim, apparently, like, even though he was doing things that don't make any sense, he also wasn't just telling the police they could search his car. He at least had that right, I guess. But that was it. They couldn't do anything with him. So they just kind of let him go. So for the next year and a half, Bev diligently searched for her friend, determined to bring her home, but the investigation stalled. That is, until a woman was murdered nearby. On August 8th, 2010, police got a weird call. A concerned citizen called 911 and said that a man driving a silver Nissan pickup truck had stopped and asked if anyone could help him move a body. A Thurston County Sheriff's deputy saw the truck and pulled the driver over. Inside, they found the body of 60-year-old Vonda Boone. She was propped up in the passenger seat and wrapped up in sheets, plastic bags, and a sleeping bag. Vonda had been strangled, beaten, and her throat had been slit. The man driving the truck was 26-year-old door-to-door meat salesman Bernard Howell. The company he worked for was actually called the Tenino Meat Company, and Bernard's father helped him start it, so it was like his company. So what does this have to do with Nancy? Other than Tenino being a small town, it turns out that Bernard and Nancy may have crossed paths. Nancy's daughter Sam had said that he had come to the house and sold her mother meat. She actually even picked his photo out of a lineup and said that Nancy had bought lemon pepper chicken and either shrimp or prawns. Bill corroborated his daughter's story because he found the meat from the Tenino Meat Company in Nancy's freezer when he had gone to clean out her house. It struck him as weird because in addition to the chicken and seafood, she also had several steaks from the same company and Nancy was basically a vegetarian. Sam doesn't remember her mother buying steaks that day, so she wonders if Bernard could have come back another day.
Okay, so we have these two potential times when he could have been there.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's weird that she was quote-unquote basically a vegetarian for her to have meat in the freezer if her kids aren't.
Yeah, but, you know, this is also coming from Bill, her husband of 11 years, and her kid's other parent. Like, he still thought that was weird. So it was, you know, maybe she didn't necessarily make the kid steaks. Like, I don't make steaks for people.
That's fair. But you know? You're not basically a vegetarian. You are 100%
right.
A vegetarian.
But still, like, maybe it was something like that because Bill is the one who said that that was weird. And actually, I didn't even think about it until just now. But, you know, when you brought up, like, this whole thing with Nancy didn't bring guys over, but she had that second wine glass. Maybe that also accounts for the steaks in the freezer. Maybe the steaks weren't for her or her kids, but, you know, maybe there was a reason she had them in there.
Vegetarians make really good steak.
Shout out to my sister, who apparently makes the best steak in the world, despite never having eaten one.
Don't know how to explain it. Literally the best steak I've ever had.
Bernard eventually pled guilty to Vonda's murder, and after that was all settled, police went and interviewed him about Nancy. But Bernard denied having anything to do with her disappearance. He also denied having ever met her or having ever sold her meat. Like, we know that second part isn't true because they found the meat in her freezer.
But do we know Did he have any other employees?
It doesn't sound like it, because
maybe his father occasionally ran routes for him. I don't know.
No, it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like maybe his father like helped him get the business started, like give him money or whatever, but
didn't necessarily have hands in the operations.
No, I think it was pretty much just him. And at that time, you know, and I don't want to get too much into this guy, but like, he, you know, has a history of mental illness, and this meat company that his father helped him start, they had started it in 2008, and apparently like it started off pretty well, but as you know, and as many of us like Americans know, 2009, the economy tanked. And so like his business really was in a downturn at this point. So I don't think that he would have had like other employees or, you know, anything like, I think it was pretty much just him, and he was barely keeping his head above water. Like, it seems as though Bernard is lying about ever having come across Nancy or, you know, having crossed paths with her. But does that mean that he abducted her? And all right, like, you look at it from the perspective of the place where Vonda was grabbed was very close to Nancy's house. However, this guy does not exactly seem like a criminal mastermind. You know, looking back to Vonda's murder, he not only asked a random stranger to help him bury a body, but his initial story to the deputy who pulled him over was that he had found Vonda already dead on a running trail. And so he picked her up and was planning on disposing of her body so that he could save her family money on the burial. Like, he doesn't know her or her family or anything like that, but he is like, listen, a deal's a deal, and $5,000 is $5,000. Let me help these people out.
Sure.
The idea that he apparently abducted and murdered Nancy Moyer 18 months earlier and left zero evidence behind, hid her body so well that she hasn't been found for 13 years, like, doesn't seem incredibly likely to me.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It doesn't seem like the two have anything in common. I mean, if you're going to go with the serial killer avenue, like, the victims don't match. Which, okay, we've gone down the road. We know that serial killers are not always strict
on the type,
age, yeah, or type or whatever. Mm-hmm. But MO of abduction or murder, that also doesn't match. None of this syncs up.
Right. It only matches up geographically.
Right.
You know, because Tenino is such a small town, and it's so weird for two things like this to happen within 18 months of each other.
Right, which is another kudos to the police department, because like, you could very easily dismiss it just like we did here.
Yeah, they didn't dismiss it. And again, like, as soon as this made the news, because obviously the murderer of Vonda Boone made the local news, you know, and people immediately started drawing parallels. And so the police kind of had to investigate it. But yeah, and they did. Like, they investigated, but they didn't find much. You know, it's kind of like with Jim, right? They're like, okay, well, this is weird. He seems like he's maybe lying about parts of this or whatever it is. But
there's no physical evidence linking
him to
it.
Yeah, there's no...
Right.
Yeah, there's no real link at all.
Right.
So, like, there's nothing they can really do. So it's like, okay, so now at this point, it's a year and a half later. They've, you know, got Jim. They've got Bernard Howell, who's an actual murderer. But
at least they explored that option.
Yeah. And I mean, they haven't ruled him out. They're not saying like, no, it's not him, because they don't know. Like, maybe he got lucky and like, maybe he was just a little more mentally together on March 6th, 2009. And he was able to do a better job with Nancy. And maybe he was like decompensating 18 months later when he abducted and murdered Vonda Boone. I don't know. So he wasn't completely ruled out. But again, there just wasn't anything solid there at all. So after this, the case goes cold again. In 2012, it was assigned to a new detective who started from the beginning and re-interviewed everyone whom investigators had spoken with back in 2009. including Jim Roth. And that's where we're going to leave you this week. Next week, we're going to go into phase two of the investigation. So that's basically when it gets assigned to this new detective. We're in 2012, about 3 years after her disappearance. We'll talk about Jim Roth's re-interview and a new major suspect whom we haven't even mentioned yet. And things get crazy, like just nuts. So thank you for joining us. And as always, part two will be up on our Patreon shortly after this is released, so you don't have to wait long. It will also be ad-free, as always. And you can access this and all of our other episodes early and ad-free at patreon.com/attwgpod. For everyone else, part two will be in your podcast feed next week. Nancy Moyer has been missing from Tenino, Washington since March 6, 2009. She is a white woman with brown hair and brown eyes. She was 4'11" and approximately 115 pounds. She has several tattoos and a scar on her right knee. Her ears and her navel are pierced. Nancy was 36 years old when she went missing. She would be 49 today. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Nancy Moyer or of any of the persons of interest in this case, please call the Thurston County Sheriff's Office at 360-786-5279. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWGPod on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
At Ritual, we're celebrating all moms this Mother's Day, current and aspiring. So whether you're looking for fertility support, natal coline, or our best-selling clinically backed prenatal, we've got you covered. Find your Ritual. Go to ritual.com/podcast and for a limited time, get 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Based on net sales from industry data, including Nielsen IQ, Stackline, and Numerator as of Q4 2024 and top 5 products.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.